Welcome to episode 8 of the Ace of Spada podcast featuring your boy, Anthony Spada. And today's guest is an online coach who is an affiliate with Alpha Elite. He has been one of the best guys that I've been in contact with over the past few years. And I have decided to finally have him on as a guest. Today's guest is Matty Fusaro, an online coach who has really impacted hundreds and hundreds of people through his coaching and has helped me through some hard times that tough to explain. But we talk about everything from daily walks to finding the right coach and the communication of coaching and what makes a really good coach. You guys are going to want to tune in. We also talk about mental function. I always stress this and I will always touch on it in every single podcast that we have. Mental health in some sort of capacity does come up in this. Get ready. It's an hour long podcast. We killed it. And just want to give a quick shout out to Rev Up Nutrition. They have two great products, Nitrous and Tune Up. Use code SPADA to get 15% off on their products. And shout out to Fitletics by Matt Saxon, who is my coach. Get 10% off by using code SPADA. Definitely recommend both these brands. I wouldn't be doing this if I don't support them. They have my support 100%. So definitely go check them out. So we're going to get to it. Welcome, Matty Fusaro.
All right, thank you, Matty, for coming on the Ace of Spada podcast. Really appreciate you taking the time out for you to come on. So we're just going to get right into it. Let's talk about these daily walks that you post on Instagram story every day. Can you go over why you do them, how it helps you start your day and such?
Yeah, man. So first of all, thank you for having me on the podcast, man. It's an absolute honor. And to get into the daily walks thing, it was something that I actually just needed because of my job being an online coach and spending a lot of time sitting down behind a computer screen. I wasn't getting my steps in. And that was something that I feel like most people didn't pay attention to, and now it's becoming extremely popular where people are focusing on step count rather than just doing cardio in the gym. So that was something I never really paid attention to, and I would always do my warm up and cool down on the treadmill at the gym before my training and after just to wind down a little bit. But I never really thought about the actual value of walking during the day and getting some sun exposure and getting myself outside and moving more frequently. So I would spend these long bouts of time sitting behind the computer, and then my only activity would really be in the gym. And I realized there needs to be a way for me to split up the day, start my day and end my day. And that was where the daily walk came from. So not only were they a way for me to kind of get outside, maybe start my morning off, get in the right mindset, or later at night to wind down before the night ends, but it was a way for me to also learn on the go. So one of my favorite things to do while going on walks is listening to podcasts or audiobooks, which really helps me get information without having to sit still. And that was a huge game changer for me. So yeah, sometimes I prefer the longer walks early in the morning, and that might consist of like a 30 to 40 minute walk where I really want to spend some time either by myself to get myself ready for the day or to consume some content in some way. But I'm also really big on taking smaller, frequent walks throughout the day. And that's something that I have a lot of my clients do, because I understand that not everyone has a 30 or 40 minute block where they can just go out and walk, because walking takes time. So not everyone has the freedom to do that. So that's where I advocate maybe step away for 10 minutes if you're at a desk job or if you're very sedentary. You get fresh air, you get moving. It's a great way to actually aid in digestion for a meal. So after you eat, you can go on a walk. It doesn't add any stress to your training and can actually help with recovery. So there are just way too many benefits to daily walking that I think people aren't paying attention to. And I just encourage people to give it a shot if it's not something they're doing.
Yeah. I've definitely, since you've put it on your story, I've actually, like, have been studying, looking at this and such like that. And I was going to bring up the digestion and all that, and like the value of taking those smaller, maybe 10-minute walks, because I remember looking at your story, and then from there, I found Stan Efferding, and he is vertical diet, always stresses doing like the 3 10-minute walks a day, and I found that to be like the best thing. That's one of the best things that could have possibly happened in terms of not only digestion, but like the way, like a way like my body looks, honestly, like it comes from getting those steps in, and it helps me, like you said, like prep for my day. Like my 10-minute, like my first 10-minute walk is always, especially being a college student, you're kind of close to campus. So it's always walking to the gym, and it helps me get, like, if I didn't have that 10-minute walk to the gym, I'd be in the wrong mindset, even just trying to step in there and doing what I need to do, because I usually listen to some sort of classical like motivation video on like Mulligan Brothers or Machiavelli Motivation, where I just plug it in and that gets me in the zone. So do you usually, like, have you ever done it where you go and then you go right to the gym, or is it a fully separate type of prep for you to go to the gym?
Yeah, I try and take the walks as, I guess you could say, like me time, and to not really amp myself up too much. That's kind of my restorative time. So, but with that said, I actually always incorporate a 10-minute walk on the treadmill while I'm in the gym. So I don't have the luxury right now to walk to the gym, which I wish I did. And I wish I kind of found this earlier on when I was a college kid on campus and really paying attention to those daily walks. Because obviously as a student, you're walking anyway from class to class, yeah. But it's because you have to, you know, you got to get to class. But if I knew more about the benefits of just incorporating the practice of daily walking in, for whether it be time to yourself or to learn on the go or to get yourself in the right mindset, I just think there's so much power in it. So when I get to the gym, I do that 10-minute walk, and that is kind of my time to actually visualize the workout that I'm about to do. So one thing that's cool about my gym is there's like a cardio deck up top that looks over the gym. So sometimes I'll literally look at the machines or the free weight section and think about my workout and actually envision myself going through the training, going through the steps of the specific exercise. And that really helps me just kind of dial in and get myself focused for the training.
Yeah, I might actually take that, because one of our gyms at Penn State, we have 3 gyms. So we have the luxury of choosing where we want to go. And one of the gyms actually has the deck above for cardio. So I might actually need to incorporate that, where I take maybe like a 5 to 10 minute walk before I even get started and visualize. Because I haven't ever really visualize that workout, and I don't know if you stress out with your clients to try and visualize, but I've never truly done that, and I've heard it works really well for like getting results. Is that like if you see what you're going to do, or if you think about what weights you're going to use and actually succeeding at lifting those weights, then it's going to equal a better performance, which usually it does. So I've never done that, so I might honestly take that in and try that for the next few weeks and see what results I get from trying to do that.
Yeah, man, the truth is, and I think people forget about this, is everything is an experiment. You know, we try and like research everything before we even give it a shot. And sometimes the research just isn't there. You don't need to read like a scientific reference or a book for everything that you want to incorporate into your day. Like for you, if you say that walking makes you feel a million times better after you eat a meal, you don't need research to back that up. Even if research said it's going to make you feel worse, like, you know how you feel. So I always encourage people to just try things. If you don't like them, you don't have to continue with them, but just give it a shot. You never know. You'll either try something new and it will be a complete game changer for you, or you'll try it and you'll just say it's not for me, and then you move on.
Yeah, I think that definitely counts with, I guess kind of we'll go into more of like a food type topic right here real quick, is that I always experiment with different types of food, and I think that's the best way to do it as being human, is that you could see it as just a macro, but if your body doesn't respond correctly to a type of food, like oatmeal or something, then don't do that and try to find some other carb source to eat. Because sometimes I had to go through a period where I had to find what foods were great for my digestion and what actually gave me energy, because there's sometimes carbs that do slow you down, and I end up getting tired, and I try to stick away from those. So I stick to more now just like fruits and veggies and trying to get like, and honestly, white rice. So I'm literally taking Stan Efferding's diet basically.
Yeah.
It honestly works so well for myself, but it took me a few years to get that experimentation done where I know confidently what I'll respond best to.
Yeah, no, I love that, dude. And that's, again, that's what it's all about, experimenting with yourself. And this is where the whole, if it fits your macros and flexible dieting, and everyone is talking about the right way to diet or the right way to do things. And we all want to focus on the main thing, or at least my recommendation to everyone that I work with is you want to focus on a nutrient dense diet, right? The more you can minimize the packaged foods and the processed foods, probably the better you'll feel, you'll perform, you'll recover. So sticking to whole nutrient dense vitamins, minerals, all of that, and making sure that your diet is comprised mostly of that. But then beyond that is experimenting with the different types of foods and food sources. So if I was to tell you the best thing that you can eat pre-workout is oatmeal with a scoop of protein powder, well, you might be lactose intolerant or sensitive to lactose, and you might not digest oats very well. So that would probably be the worst combination for you. It might be the best pre-workout meal for me, but absolutely terrible for you. So it is very important to look at biofeedback. I encourage people that after you eat something, write down how you're feeling. You know, so when we go into the gym, we should have a training log. So we're actually tracking progression of what's happening in the gym. And then when it comes to the nutrition side of things, we're using apps like MyFitnessPal to log all of the macros and calories that we eat for the day. But what a lot of people aren't doing is journaling or writing down how they're responding to certain things. You know, so it's great to track your calories and macros and know your exact numbers based on what your specific goals are. But are you paying attention to how you feel when your fiber gets too high or your sodium levels or how you're performing and digesting? And I think all of those things are often overlooked.
Yeah. Is that how you, so I want to get more into, because I know my coach more just gives me a macro base, because I guess that's the whole reason for having the coach is that he wants to teach me how to do it on my own. So when I'm done, I know what I need to do. Like, I personally like having a coach because it keeps me accountable. But how do you train your clients like that, like the same way? Is that how you approach nutrition, or are you a meal plan type of coach where you will kind of at least give them some sort of meals that believe that will fit within their macros, or are you just give them the macros and they can figure it out?
Yeah, I'm more of the educational route. So I think handing someone a meal plan just based on their gender, height, and weight is not coaching. And I also think prescribing someone a set of macros is not really coaching. You're giving them a sense of direction and you're giving them numbers to follow and targets to hit. But I think you should be educating them along the way, because if someone's hiring you as a coach, there's something that's missing from what they're currently doing or not doing. And it's the responsibility of the coach to find out what it is and how you can help them. So while macros might get them to their body composition goal, so you can easily put someone in a calorie deficit, and if they hit their numbers, they will ultimately reach that goal weight that they're aiming for. But I do think it's important to look at other things. So for me, I will assign macronutrient targets, but I also encourage my clients to share their food log with me. So I'll ask them for their MyFitnessPal username and we'll take a look over their diet together, and I can offer suggestions and recommendations based on what I see. So I'll take a look at the quality of their food. So even if they're losing weight and that's their main goal, are they getting in an adequate amount of fiber? Are they varying their food sources? Are they getting a variety of vitamins and minerals? So I think there's more than just prescribing calories and macros.
Yeah, I think that's definitely important, because a lot of people don't know how those small intakes work, especially sodium. Sodium is a big one. So I always stress, that's one thing I kind of stress about people that come to me with advice, is that I also stress that they got to get in the right amount of salt, because if you don't get the right amount of salt in, it's kind of tough for your body to stay hydrated. And a lot of people think that that salt's really bad for you when it's actually really good for your hydration. But people think it means the polar opposite for some reason, which I don't understand. But but yeah, so I guess that kind of leads. We'll get back into the mental function later. But I guess this is going to be kind of leading into what we were going to talk about, which is also coaching. So Maddie is an online coach. That's how he survives and everything and thrives. So I want you to go into, like, I guess you already kind of touched on it, but what makes a good coach, at least in your mind, that makes you like separate yourself from others, just like your opinion on like what makes a good coach?
Okay. So yeah. So like you said, I've been coaching for about 7 years or so now. And I started first actually personal training. So I did one-on-one training in the gym, which I believe there is a ton of value to doing that, especially if you're working with people on the training side of things. So if you're writing a training program for someone, you need to know how they're moving in the gym. Are they proficient at performing the exercises? And when you get that hands-on experience in the gym before going online, I think that's extremely valuable. So I do recommend people work at least with humans in person before they transition to online, or at least do both at the same time so you do get that personal interaction as well. But when it comes to online coaching, I mean, the biggest thing is human connection and communication. That's essentially what coaching is. So to me, a great coach is someone who will be accommodating to the individual's specific needs and goals. So they're not there to tell you what they think you should do. They should be helping you find your why. Like, why do you want a coach and why do you have specific goals? Like, what do those goals actually mean to you? And then you want to assess those goals together. And then you have to figure out what's going to work best for the person that you're working with. So look at their commitments, their schedule, their lifestyle. And I think that is, again, oftentimes overlooked. Coaches, from what I've seen nowadays, is a lot of coaches are just interested in that testimonial and seeing if they can get someone from point A to point B. But you also want to look at how you get there.
Yeah.
So that's a huge part of it. It's not, you can't look at people as a paycheck. You can't look at them as just a source of income or just another testimonial for your website to promote your services. There is so much more that goes into coaching. And I think a lot of people lack that human connection and that communication that's extremely important and necessary. So I think that's the biggest thing. I believe that great coaches, it has nothing to do with their social media following. It has nothing to do with what their specific physique looks like. Although I do believe that if you're going to coach someone, especially when it comes to maybe a physique athlete or someone who's looking to improve their body composition, you should probably look good yourself.
Yeah.
To show that you know what you're doing. That's not to say that like you can be overweight and still be an incredible coach and be very knowledgeable and be very good at communicating with people. But I do think that you should at least be in shape yourself, you know, be active, be training, understand nutrition. I think that's really important. But yeah, man, great coaches, they believe in the person that they're working with. They're disciplined themselves. They're a positive person to be around. They're empathetic towards the people they're working with. They're extremely great communicators, but more importantly, listeners. So being able to take a step back and listen to the client that they're working with instead of just telling, speaking, you know, I think that's another thing. As a coach, it's very easy to tell people what they should do instead of sitting back and listening to maybe the pain point or what someone's struggling with.
Yeah, I think one of the main things is, at least from my perspective, I mean, I'm not a coach. I want to become one. So that's why I wanted to get you on here, is because I want to get some tips before we end the podcast. But it's like, I wanted to learn what makes it a great coach so I can take these tips. And I think number one for me, I think, is along with you, is the communication part. But I think number two, along with that communication, is being 100% honest. Because I feel like some people can just get away and they won't give their opinion. Like if I have a client in the future that I can tell is not doing their part and they look like crap, I will be 100% with them and tell them that that's the reason. Like if I see that their numbers are off or anything and that they're not hitting their goals and such, it's like I will be 100% honest. And is that how you roll? Is that like what you do? Like, are you always 100? I know. Well, I mean, it's not even a question that you're probably 100% honest with your clients. Do you call your clients out if they're not actually doing the work?
Yes, I think so. This just comes down to communication, but more important than just communication, it's also how you communicate. So some people just respond differently to the way you talk to them. So you have to find the right way to talk to each client. There are some people out there who want to hear you just shoot it straight and have that no bullshit approach, and they're okay with you. Sorry, am I allowed to swear on here?
Yes, you are. Yeah, okay. No problem with that.
All right. So yeah, there are those coaches who they'll call you out, like straight to your face, call you out. And some people are okay with that and they take that feedback very well and they're able to get back on track. Whereas others, you have to empathize a little bit more and find out why they're maybe falling off track.
Yeah.
So as a coach, I only know what the client tells me. So the data that they give me, the check-ins, the updates, all of that is, I need to make sure that they're being honest and transparent with that. Otherwise, I can't make any changes. So I always look for that open and honest communication, because as a coach, I'm not just going to make a sporadic decision or adjustment based on zero data. So if I have, you know, I have spreadsheets and everything that my clients fill out, if they're not filling them out and there's no data for me to work off of, I can't make adjustments to the plan moving forward.
Yep.
And so I have to let them know that, like, the excuses, it gets uncomfortable to hear when it's like week after week. And I understand everyone has different situations. Everyone has those tough weeks and stressful times, but you hired me for a reason and my job is to help you as much as possible. So I'll go above and beyond for everyone that I work with, because I'm actually obsessed with helping people, but I need them to be honest with me.
Yeah, and I think that's the accountability factor that you have to leave to the client. And I've been there where I was one time not the best client with communication, and it ended up leading to me not getting some of the results I could have gotten. And it's because I just wasn't 100% honest with them. And like, that's, I guess that was going into my next question, was how do you keep your clients, like, your strategy for keeping your client accountable?
It just comes right back down to communication again.
Yeah.
I find out what that individual needs. So there are some people who, obviously I never do this, but I can not talk to them for a month and they will be on track every single week and nail their goals, which I would never do. But there are people on the opposite end of that who actually need that daily interaction. And I have no problem hopping on a call or sending out a text message or an email every single day to make sure that someone stays on track. Now, with that said, I'm not here to just hold someone's hand every single day throughout the process, because you need to learn to do it on your own. And if you're constantly relying on someone to send you a text every morning to get out of bed and train and hit your nutrition goals, you'll never be able to do it on your own. So you need people to understand how to do this by themselves. But in the beginning, again, you need to find out what that individual needs specifically and just make sure they know that you're there for them.
Yep.
And that comes down to, you know, asking very pointed and focused questions. So you want the client to think and reflect. You can't just keep force feeding them information, because sometimes they're going to get lost and they're going to get overwhelmed. So you need to help the client take whatever problem or pain point or struggle they're dealing with and identify a realistic action that they can take in order to overcome that. So it's not just about telling them and demanding them what they should do. It's about asking specific questions, guiding them, and supporting them.
Okay. Yeah. I fully understand that, because coming from me, where there's some people like myself who I do have a coach, but I also know what I have went into it knowing what macros and everything are and what I need to do and how much effort I need to put in. So I know, like, sometimes this is the point where I guess, like you were talking about with the communications, that do they really know what it is? And it's a different approach and communication wise between someone who knows what they're talking about and at least knows relatively about nutrition and fitness in general, compared to someone who's just coming in brand new, which is exactly the point I wanted to get across, which is another question of when should people, the best time for people to hire a coach, if there is a best time, and why should they, like, and why should they hire one? I guess we'll start with the when first, though.
That's actually a really, really good question. So I think as a coach, it's important that you work with a more specific group of people and not try and work with everyone. So if you are a coach who is, I guess you could say, quote unquote, like macro based, then maybe you should only take on clients who have at least 1 to 2 years experience logging their food, using a food scale. Otherwise, you're going to overwhelm them, because if you only know how to coach someone based on macros, but they don't have experience with that, you're going to confuse the hell out of them and you're going to make it really, really challenging for them. Or maybe you're a coach who actually doesn't do macros and you just focus on the beginner and you teach them how to create healthier habits and you teach them simple things that you can implement throughout your day to reach your goals. And then you can graduate towards the macros and the calorie tracking. But some people don't need that right off the bat. The beginner who's never put anything on a food scale, if you give them a set of macros, they will have no idea what to do. So now you need to incorporate healthy habits. you know, the simple things like don't drink your calories and try and get 2 to 5 servings of vegetables per day and go on a walk every day. Like, those are the things. So I think it's important you know who your ideal client is so you can best help them. Now, on the other side, if you are someone looking to hire a coach, that really depends on, you know, specifically what you're looking to do. So maybe you have a significant goal and realistically achieving that goal is going to take X amount of months. And you've maybe failed multiple times in the past because you've either lacked confidence or knowledge or motivation, it might be a really smart idea to have that extra accountability.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I've definitely, I wish in my case is that I wish I hired someone right off the bat because I came into it having no clue what to do. And I think I did what every other person in the world that goes into it with no knowledge is and goes to bodybuilding.com, looks up a training plan, tries to just bang that out like a nice little, I don't know. I think I was hitting arms every other day and legs every other day. So it was like whatever. It was like Monday, Wednesday, Friday would be arm day. And then like Tuesday, Thursday would have been legs. And I would have made such better progress myself if I had a coach at that point. But now that I have one, it's like just consistency. I think it comes to the fact of the coach, why I hired one was because I wanted a consistency factor of I have the accountability of going to the gym every single day or most days of the week. I go 5 out of 7. So I think that's why I hired one. But I totally understand your I like how you have that more specific type of client that people should do because I was thinking about it and it's I feel like it's easier to do more of a training type coaching rather than nutrition because I normally don't like to touch nutrition. Anytime anybody asks me a nutrition question, I refer them to my friend who is a registered dietitian. He's the person that could tell people he can actually give them advice. And do you usually go to advice from people such as like, do you usually have friends who are registered dietitians that at least give you advice on maybe how to handle a specific client or have you ever done that?
Yeah, and I've also referred out. So I have a specific set of coaching core values and a code of ethics that I follow. And listen, I really value the coach-client relationship. And I believe that that's based on reciprocal trust. So if I'm going to provide the best coaching experience that I can, then I'm going to be committed to making sure that I stay in my lane and my scope of practice. And also I recognize my boundaries. So if a client is dealing with something that I am not comfortable with, whether it be something in regards to their training, an injury, something psychological, maybe something with their nutrition, like binge eating, I can offer suggestions, but I will never, I will always let them know that this is not my area of expertise. And I would be more than happy to link you up with someone who I feel can better take on what you're dealing with. And I feel that many coaches don't do that. And what they'll do is they'll try and Google the answer to the question that the client has, rather than just recommend going to see someone else like a medical professional. So I get all the time, I get people coming to me because I made a video a few years back on YouTube about back pain because I dealt with herniated discs and really bad back pain. And all I did, obviously there was a huge disclaimer in the beginning of the video, I'm not a medical professional, any of that. I just shared 1 or 2 stretches that helped me tremendously. Somehow, I don't know, the video ended up going viral. It's got like 2 something million views on it. And people to this day find me from that video and they'll email me asking for like low back advice. I'm just like, dude, I don't know. Like I had injuries. I overcame them. I feel good now. I could squat, I could deadlift, but I will never tell you that you should do what I did to get to where I am. So I think people really need to learn how to stay in their lane and not be afraid to refer out or contact someone else who can better help them.
Yeah, I think definitely, I think you hit the nail on the point right there with the, exactly with what I was kind of going to mention after you were done, which is that people always think that coaches are a one-stop shop for every answer, which is never the case. I think I have my coach, and then I have about 3 or 4 other friends who help me along the way if I do have other questions because I know I can refer to them for more scientific advice if I do have that underlying question that I just can't get answered from him or that he won't and I have the trust of my coach because we have a personal relationship together, that I know I can go to other people and he knows that because I'm in constant communication with them. And then I report back to him what they tell me so he can adjust things if need be. Because
yeah, I love that, man. I that's the crazy thing is I've worked with over 500 people one-on-one now. Wow. And the amount of people that I've heard that come to me either had a previous coach who really was kind of careless and irresponsible. They'll either tell me that they sent them a meal plan, they never heard from them again, or this. I believe that if you're hiring a coach, you should ask questions and you should ask a lot of questions. But there are actually some coaches out there with a very big ego. And the second you question them, they get pissed off, you know, and they just say like, because I said so kind of answers.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge red flag. And
yeah,
I think as a client, you better be asking a lot of questions because you're paying a lot of money. It's an investment, right? So I encourage everyone to, even if it's the simplest question you think it sounds stupid, just ask it. And if the coach has an issue with it, then maybe that's your red flag and that's your sign to tell the coach, you know, I need to move on. I need to find someone else.
Yeah, I always have a list of questions that normally I've had two coaches now. I'm on my second coach right now. And I did not have a problem with the first one whatsoever. We had good results. It was on my accountability that I failed myself. So now I have a list of questions and I've learned from that. So I have a list of questions now that I ask them before I even decide to say I want to go on. And a lot of coaches actually respond and they were in that situation that you just described where they do get pissed off about all the questions. And I'm like, if you really want to work with a client, You should really answer as many questions as they have so they feel comfortable with you to start.
And because you got to think, sorry to interrupt you, but it just made me think, if they don't ask the questions in the beginning, eventually down the road, they're going to come up.
Yeah.
So why not get those out of the way in the beginning and make sure that that person feels comfortable working with you first?
Yeah. And some of them avoid answering questions until you pay them, which is really dumb in my situation. I'm like, if you want to earn that personal communication, that personal trust and that human connection, you have to answer those questions. And that's like how you sell your stuff. And I want to know like how, I also want to know though, how you put a value. How did you put like a, I wouldn't say a number value, because I don't think there is, at least to me, health doesn't have a number value or a price point for it. So I usually pay whatever I want to pay, because I care more about my health. So I want to know like how you come up with like your value for like your coaching, like type thing.
Yeah, so I mean, I believe a lot of the value comes from the time I've spent and the money that I've spent educating myself, as well as the time I've spent with the experience that I have. So I've been doing this, I mean, training myself over 13 plus years, working with people for years one-on-one in the gym setting, and then working 7 plus years online, 900 plus YouTube videos. The first, I would say, 400 to 500 of them, I never took on a paying client. So that amount of free information, I didn't just pull that out of thin air,
yep.
Right? So I had to spend who knows how many hours reading, researching, networking with people, spending my own money. I hired a coach for my own show. So I believe that the value just really comes from my years and years of experience, education, and money that I spent to get the knowledge that I have. So it's like, you got to think about it. I mean, we all have access to pretty much the same information.
Yep.
Anything that I've read before, someone can either Google or they can spend $30 or $40 on an ebook and learn a lot of the same information. But that doesn't always translate into action. And that's where the value of a true coach comes in. So that's one of the reasons why I don't, you know, I don't have like my prices listed on my website.
Yeah.
I don't have a buy it now button. I if people want to go that route, that's fine. But the thing that throws me off is if you don't know who I am and you go to my website and it says 12 weeks of coaching for $500 and you click buy now without ever talking to me, first of all, how do you know that I'm the right coach for you? And how do I know that you're the right client for me? You could have a requirements page or frequently asked questions to where you try and limit the people like who apply for your coaching. So maybe you say you need at least 2 years of experience in the gym, or you need to understand macros. I think that's the value of having a very thorough coaching application as well. But when I see people have a buy it now button, and then after they pay, they get sent the coaching questionnaire. I don't understand that. How do you know anything about that client? Because now what happens is you got paid, you look over the questionnaire, and they're dealing with injuries that you don't know how to work around or work through. They're dealing with maybe they've had some poor relationships with food and their dietary habits, and that's not something you have experience with. So now you have two choices. One, you try and start Googling the answers to these questions and you decide, you know what, I already got paid, so I'm going to do everything I can to help them. Or two, you now have to refund them because you're not qualified to work with them. And that just causes a big headache for everyone. So I will never work with someone until I have gotten on the phone with them after they fill out the questionnaire. So we go over the questionnaire together. We talk about their specific goals, their history of training and nutrition. And then after that phone consultation, we decide, are we a good fit for one another?
Yeah, I think that's the best. I think that's the best way to go about it. That's what my coach now did. I mean, he's also someone I knew before I even signed up, but I wanted to make sure he was still the right person for me, because that also gets into that relationship thing where some people trust people before they even get into the coaching, and that personal relationship might interfere with that coach and client relationship. So I definitely understand the getting on the phone and at least sending the questionnaire, because I don't think it's worth it for I don't think it might not be worth it for the client. The client loses money, and then you also could lose money because you might not know how to handle the situation, and then you have to refund them the money. So, and I think you're definitely right with going back to the specific type of client is that you want to make sure that they know and that you can get the effort from them and that they will actually be accountable. And I think that's a whole big part of success. And going into success, away from more of the coaching, my podcast more touches on mental health a little bit. If you have listened to the first episode or not, I went through a very serious point of depression back when I was in high school. I became a bit suicidal at that point, but fitness saved my life. So that's why I am doing this podcast. Number one is to help people who were in the same situation get out of it if I can, and people can reach out to me whenever. So I want to know if you ever been stuck in one of those situations, and how have you gotten out of that? Have you ever been stuck in that state? Number one.
Yeah. So, I mean, how old are you, by the way?
Oh, I am. I just turned 22, weeks ago.
So young, man.
Yeah.
I know you had also, you shared that with me through Instagram DMs when we first started talking. And I think, first of all, the fact that you opened up and shared that, I really appreciate that, and that you've overcome it and fitness really helped. That's truly amazing. And it goes to show you the power of something that you might not think can help a situation like that really can. I don't think enough people realize that. The importance of taking care of your physical health can dramatically improve your mental health.
Yep.
And that's something that, doing things like this, doing this podcast and talking about it openly is what people need. Too many people, especially men, I don't know whether it's an ego thing or an insecurity thing, whatever it is, it's really hard to talk about these types of things. But when you actually do and you open up about it, it can change someone's life. And I've noticed that, this is very different than what you went through, but just even talking about male insecurities and body image issues, no guy wants to admit that they're uncomfortable taking their shirt off, because to some people it makes you feel like less of a man. Well, I actually took advantage of that, because I was someone who was extremely insecure my whole life and didn't take my shirt off till I was 17. So I was swimming with a shirt on, and I had, I was very self-conscious, and I lacked confidence when it came to that kind of thing. And that's no way for someone to grow up. You're 16, 17, 18 year old. That's when you're becoming a man and you're really developing that confidence. And if you were the person that everyone's looking at when you say, nah, I can't come to the beach, or I can't do this or that because you're so insecure with how you look and feel, when people can actually open up to that, admit it, and then make a change and show people that it's possible to get out of that mindset, it makes a world of a difference. And when I was actually invited to Colgate University to talk on disordered eating and male body image issues. And this is coming from someone who dealt with that. So to be able to overcome that and then share my experience with people and make them feel like they're not alone is, I was life-changing for me, and I hope it was for other people as well. When I was younger, you know, just to give some insight, well, now 2 days ago, I just turned 32, so yep. I have 10 years on you.
Congratulations, anyway. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. But I've dealt with my fair share of adversity, and, you know, I've dealt with some pretty bad anxiety when I was younger, and I've had some situations that kind of threw me off a little bit. You know, I was in a pretty bad car accident back in 2000. Wow, so long ago now. I'm sorry, 2008 maybe it was.
Okay.
Or it might have even been before that, 2006, 2007. Anyway, yeah, I was in that car accident. I was on bed rest for a few months. I was told I was going to lose vision in my left eye, and I couldn't drive and I couldn't read. So pretty much I had to have my left eye closed at all times. It was actually like swollen shut. And then I had to wear an eye patch, and I wasn't allowed to have any movement in that eye. So that meant that I couldn't read. I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't do anything that could force my eye to move. So it was pretty much laying in bed doing like absolutely nothing. And that took a toll on me. Like bad. And that's where things come in. Like, okay, so I can either lay in bed and be absolutely crippled by this and miserable for months, or I could do something about it. And nowadays, I mean, this is obviously dating back quite a while, but nowadays, think about all the resources that we have, whether it be a self-help audiobook or a book on something that you're interested in learning about. So if that's fitness and nutrition, awesome. If it's finances, if it's mental health, you can sit there and you can listen to these things, and that can maybe give you hope, and it can teach you. And then you can take that knowledge that you acquired and educate other people. So there are so many ways nowadays, and I feel like it's easy. It's the easy way out to lay around and do nothing about it and not take action.
Yeah.
But there are so many things that you can do to take action and to come back stronger with that more positive mindset. And, you know, we can talk about mindset if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, totally. We could totally delve into that if you want to just go down the rabbit hole. We can go down that rabbit hole. I love talking about this type of topic. So go away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it quick, man. Like, there are obviously books and everything. So one of the books that I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with now is Mindset. Like, that's the name of the book. Mm-hmm. So that book is by Carol Dweck, and she talks a lot about the difference between like a growth mindset and a fixed mindset.
Yep.
And just real quick, so fixed is just you're believing that your basic abilities and traits are fixed, and there's absolutely nothing you can do to improve or change them. A lot of people are stuck in that. I believe that there was a point in time when I was younger where I did have that fixed mindset. I really just didn't feel like I was good enough for certain things. And then you have the growth mindset, where you believe that your abilities can be developed, and with time and with experience, you can grow and you can keep learning and learning. And I think that that's been proven time and time again. So it's just a matter of whether you're going to believe that or not.
Oh yeah.
So I tell people, when it comes to mindset and self-identity, if you keep telling yourself you're not good enough and you're not smart enough and you lack the skills to be successful, you'll probably start to believe it.
Yeah.
And that's nobody's fault but yours.
Yep.
So how do we develop that whole growth mindset thing? Again, I'm not an expert in this, so I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no problem.
I don't want people to think now like, oh, cool, the online coach is now an expert on mindset.
No.
It's just something that, again, when you work with over 500 people, these are things that you talk about. That's where the communication comes in. So you obviously have to acknowledge your weakness. You can't ignore that. So what is it that you're actually struggling with? What are your weaknesses? And then you have to attack them and one by one start working on them. Another thing you can do is every time you face a challenge, look at it as an opportunity to get better.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to just put more energy into the process of doing things than the end result. So stop focusing on the outcome of everything and instead focus that energy on the process of getting to that end result. And that's how you start to build those habits. That's how you start to gain that experience. And that's how you start to grow. And that's the growth mindset.
Yeah, basically, I kind of relate to that right now. It's more like I didn't think I was good enough for my school that I was in. I'm in right now, and I remember my teacher told me that, and it kind of just sparked something in me, and I was like, okay. So I went in, I readjusted, and I got Dean's List for the past three semesters now. So heading in, so now I'm a senior, but then I got this internship, and I was in DC all summer, and kind of being in a different city and in a different environment really kind of just like absolutely put a flame to it. And that's why I kind of started this. I was like, oh, well, I really want to create a podcast. And I've been holding back on this. So I created a podcast, but I also created a YouTube channel too over the summer, which it may not get that many views, but I like doing it because it helps me grow and I get better at something that I'm not good at. And the podcast also has helped me grow because I'm also able to talk to people like you who normally I wouldn't have that chance to just have a casual conversation for like an hour and everybody can listen to it on the internet, just like us just chit-chatting about anything such like this. And it's led to a lot of opportunities for me already. Like I don't like to brag, but I got Chase Chunin to come on in January, which I think is like the coolest thing in the world because I've always looked up to Max and Chase. And I can't wait to have him on the podcast and talk about Everforward and such. And it's like, I'm just growing from talking to more professionals, even though I'm someone who doesn't have the greatest advice in the world. It's like, I'm taking these and I'm learning so much from the people that I'm having on the show. And I'm showing that people can do what they want if you just put your mind to it.
Dude, I love that. And all because you made the decision to just do it. I always tell people, you know, it's just action. You can talk all day long and you can think of all these things. You can drive yourself crazy telling yourself that it will never happen or it's not good enough. And you never know until you try. So I'm sure there are some guests you've had or you want to have on your podcast that you might even feel uncomfortable reaching out to them because it's like, what do I have to offer them? But you never know. Someone just might have that 30 minutes or an hour they can set aside. And the worst case scenario is they say, I'm too busy, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or can we do it at a later date? Like, there's nothing bad that can come out of asking.
Yeah, I definitely... I've been trying to get a few guests. I've been in that situation exactly how you just described it, where they've said no because I don't get the viewership. When they ask the viewership questions sometimes, it's like, oh, well, I don't get the viewers. So they're not going to go and take the time out if they're not going to get at least something in return from the people who are listening. But it's kind of like that I put it into action that I'm already there. And I think it's setting up my mental barrier. And I kind of want to touch quick on this because I don't know how much time you have. So
I'm good, man. Let's chat.
All right. So normally I like to talk about improving mental and brain function. So I think daily routines are the biggest thing. We already talked about your daily walks. Do you include anything else besides your daily walks that you at least include? And then usually I'll touch in on mine and see like where we compare and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'll be honest here, man. This is not something that I am by any means an expert in. And it's actually something that I'm personally working on. And I should be actually working on more. So I should set it higher on my list of priorities. So I understand the value, and I've heard from a lot of people that I look up to, whether it be a mentor or just someone in the space of business, entrepreneurship, or even fitness, whatever it is, there are people out there who I look up to, and they talk about certain things that they do or practices that they do, like meditation and mindfulness and yoga and all that. And I've never given that enough time to see the results it would have. So for instance, a few years ago, I wanted to start very slow. So I downloaded, I believe it was the Calm app.
Okay.
And it's simple guided meditation. I think it starts you at like 10 minutes.
Yep.
And I'm not going to lie, man. I sat there and all I was doing was thinking about other shit. I couldn't sit still. I couldn't focus. My mind was racing. But like anything else, this shit takes time and it takes practice. It's just like your first time ever tracking food. You have no idea what you're doing.
No clue.
You know what I mean? It's the first time you go into a gym. Go ahead and try a squat if you've never squatted before and see what happens. And you'll probably get frustrated. And you could train for a week and a month and a year and 2 years. And 5 years later, you're still trying to refine your technique on the squat. So for me to just, I guess you could say, give up on the meditation thing. I guess I was convincing myself. I was like, you know what? Maybe this isn't for me. Maybe there are other things that I should be doing. When in reality, I probably should have done it every single day for at the very least 30 days.
Yep.
And prove to myself that I can stick to a schedule with that, put it on my list of priorities towards the top, and just do it. And maybe after a month or 2 months, maybe I'm like, you know what? Maybe there's a different method of meditation because there are different things. There's the guided meditation. There's simply just breathing. there's journaling, there's mindfulness practices, and I haven't found what's right for me just yet. So the daily walks are great, but another problem that I have with the daily walks is that sometimes my mind wanders.
Yeah.
You know, because we're in this era where we are constantly consuming. So educating yourself is great, right? So if I go on a walk for 30 minutes and I listen to a podcast, that's awesome. I'm educating myself. I'm gaining more knowledge that can potentially help other people. But that's taking away from me focusing on what's going on in my own head.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said about sitting in silence or you know, listening to something like Brain FM or some calm music and not reading and not writing and not listening to something, like literally just sitting there with your thoughts.
Yeah.
And I believe that that's something that I need to do. So I can't give you the exact thing. I believe that meditation is powerful. I'm sure that yoga is great for, you know, relaxing yourself. I do think maybe some people like the gratitude journal thing. That could be physically writing. I'm a big fan of physically writing. I think that's really important.
Yeah, but again, we can touch on that because I also do that. I mean, I do both. I do meditation. So I think I have not worked up to more than 10 minutes, but that's because, like you said, my brain kind of starts to wander after 10 minutes. So I can give myself now clear space, and I use Sam Harris's Wake Me Up app.
Okay, wait. Yep.
That thing was the best purchase I've ever done. People call me crazy for paying $15 a month for an app. And I'm like, well, it's going to help me get in the zone for my day and help me be more productive. I'm going to do it. And I think that's just my mind.
Isn't that funny, man? Like, again, I don't mean to cut you off. That's funny that people think you're crazy for spending $15 for an entire month.
Yep.
To invest into yourself, into your health, your mental health. Like $15 is a trip to Chick-fil-A. $15 is a burrito from Chipotle. You know what I mean? Like that's where it comes down to priorities.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that's funny to me. I believe that if you're going to invest in stuff, aside from, you know, financial things like stocks and all that stuff, invest in you, invest in good habits, invest in your network, invest in your education, and most importantly, invest in your health. So maybe that means a gym membership. Maybe that means an app like you're doing. Maybe it means a coach. But look at where your money's being spent. So if you're going to criticize someone or laugh at them for spending $10 or $15 on an app that's helping them every single day, then let's take a look at where their money's being spent on Starbucks, on going out, on drinking, on Netflix. Like Netflix is about the same price as what you're doing. And the value that you're getting out of your meditation app is, I mean, I guess we can argue it's a million times better than a Netflix, you know, membership.
Probably not as entertaining. And I could say that for a fact. It's 100% not as entertaining, but it's 100% better. And I could tell you that because I've done it. I went through his beginner course, which is you have to do 50 days before you can even do the daily meditation type stuff. So you have to do a 10-minute guided one by him every single day that teaches you a different technique type thing. And it keeps improving on what you learn. And it helps you really start to get into that. And I kind of lost my way a bit. So some days I had to retract. So it more took like 60, 65 days to truly get those 50 days done. But it was like you could notice a shift. Like once you do it and you actually start to just sit there and you get silent and it's like you start to lose your thought or you gain a thought, but you know how to kind of lose it and put it away somewhere and let it disappear. It's like the benefit from doing that is like I've seen myself get less frustrated. I have more patience with things. If something gets in my way, I just take a few breaths and then I start all my work. But it's like I also do journaling too, where I do the gratitude journal. I write 3 things a day, but I also do the brain dump too. The brain dump has also been a key one for me, especially at night before I go to sleep, is I write all my thoughts out on what I'm worried about or what's on my mind right before I go to bed. So I literally have nothing to complain about. I have nothing to think about while I'm trying to fall asleep. I literally can fall asleep now within the first few minutes, where the past few years not doing that, it's taken me like 20, 30 minutes to fall asleep.
That's awesome, man. And I think you hit the nail on the head and proved that there is no one-size-fits-all approach. So you not only invest in the meditation app, but in addition to that, you're doing other things. You're doing the gratitude journal and you're doing the brain dump at night. And that's so important. And I really like for people listening who maybe they're not ready for the meditation or any of that, the simplest thing you can do is, like you said, at some point during the day, before bed is probably a smart idea. Just get a piece of paper and a pen and write down the shit that's on your mind. And it could be anything. Like there is no right or wrong answer. There is no stupid thing to write down. I don't give a shit. Literally anything. Like it could be from the groceries that you need to pick up to any appointments that you have to what you have the following day. To, you know, anything that's on your mind that you think will interrupt your sleep, just write it on that piece of paper and get it out of your head. And I think there's an extreme amount of power in doing that. And then when it comes to, I just want to touch on what you said earlier, how Netflix is more entertaining than the money that you're spending on the app. But what if that $15 a month you're spending on meditation allows you to take on a side project that makes you an extra $500 a month?
That's true.
You know what I mean? So now by doing that meditation, you have a new level of focus. You're able to do or invest into a side hustle, make all this extra money. And now that $10 on Netflix is not really a big deal anymore.
Yeah. And it helps. And it helped me get into the thing where now, like, it's not only that, and it helps you kind of visualize a bit too. Like you were saying, like with the gym, like I visualize now and it comes true. Like when I literally was writing out questions for future guests in case they want to come on, and I decided to just DM them and ask them, and literally moments after writing their questions and at deciding to DM them, they've answered back saying they wanted to be on the podcast, and I was like, oh shit.
That's awesome. You will listen, man. You'll come across some people who will have the what's in it for me mentality, and that is understandable, right? Everyone values and guards their time. And I believe that's extremely important, right? Like that's the one thing that we should be guarding. Your attention and your time is your most precious resource you have. So I do think it's important to audit that regularly and make sure that it reflects your values. But at the same time is if I was only concerned with your viewership because I wanted to know what benefit it would have for me, I am now taking away my ability to help whoever's listening to this podcast.
Yep.
So I get it. If I'm reaching out to I start a podcast tomorrow. I have no episodes and I reach out to Andy Frisella.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like probably one of the biggest podcasts in the entrepreneurial space. I have nothing to offer him. Why should he want to come on my podcast? Now you might find those people who are like, shit, you know, they're feeling good that day. And they're like, sure, I'll give you a half hour of my time because I know that the amount of value I can deliver to your audience or lack of audience, even if it's 10 people, it could be life-changing for 10 people. And other people might be like, you know what? I'd rather use that time and impact more people on possibly a bigger podcast or a YouTube channel. So it's understandable when you might get turned down by someone who just is looking for more viewership or more listeners or whatever. But at the same time, it should never stop you from just asking.
Yeah, because never stop asking has gotten me. Now I think I have close to 7-8 more guests coming on, and I'm starting to be booked through like the first few weeks of January now. Like it's like,
tell me that doesn't feel good, bro.
Like it's awesome. Like it's a thing where I'm in school, and it's like school's kind of, you know, I'm getting to the end, so I'm getting a bit of senioritis, and it's kind of. No, just trying to get through it at this point because I have something waiting for me down in DC to go move down to after school. But it's like getting guests and thinking of questions and topics is like the coolest thing ever. And I think it goes along with what you were saying about the growth mindset is that this is kind of what's pushing me to the next level. And it got me Jordan Syatt on the podcast. Like he was the last guest on this. So it was like the coolest thing having all these types of people reaching out and like me starting to get booked. And it's the coolest thing ever that I'm getting booked.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations. Honestly, that's got to feel damn good.
Yeah, it does. So we're heading to the end of this podcast. And I asked each guest the same question. Same two last questions. The first one is, what three things do you want someone to take away from this podcast?
Ooh. Damn, that's... So, I mean, from what we spoke about...
Yep.
You know, because a lot of it was on coaching and communication, I think anything that you do in life, honesty and transparency and communication is extremely important. That goes beyond coaching and fitness. And I just believe that if it's a relationship worth having, whether it be a friend, a partner, a spouse, family member, whatever it is, be honest, because that will take you much further and cause a lot less stress. There are people who are always fighting to cover up maybe their mistakes, or maybe they're just telling white lies to cover themselves. And I don't think that's going to get you anywhere in life. So I think honesty and communication is important in all areas of life. Two is do not ever fake passion, because I genuinely believe people are going to see right through it. So again, that goes for coaching, that goes for relationships. Like, you can't fake that kind of thing. And I believe if you want to make a true impact, you have to truly have a passion for that specific thing. So for me, obviously coaching is that thing that I want to have an impact on people. I want to impact people's not only physical health, but their mental health, and allow them to live a more meaningful life. So yeah, I would say passion, and with passion doesn't always mean profit. So I do believe that you should give without expectation. Giving could mean education. Giving could mean a handshake or a hug or a smile, like anything like that. Something that doesn't cost you a penny, and I promise that it will make your life feel more meaningful. And I believe when you have a purpose-driven life, you'll be a happier person. So that's another thing. And then maybe taking ownership for your life. So we talked about the importance of mental and physical health. We talked about, you know, meditation and finding things that will help your mental health. And I think that when you can take ownership of that and stop placing blame, so stop externalizing blame. Like, I talked about my car accident a little bit, and I could have easily blamed the car. I could have blamed the other driver. I could have blamed everything else and not owned it myself, even if it wasn't my fault, which it wasn't. But it's my responsibility, because it's my life.
Yep.
So I just believe that it's your life, so you need to own it. You're born with the potential for greatness, and not a lot of people take advantage of that. So live your life, live a life that, you know, I guess gives you purpose. You're going to face challenges and obstacles, but it's your responsibility to fight, because you owe it to yourself. So make promises to yourself and keep them. You know, make your priorities up. Make your priorities first. Make them come first. I just feel like if you're not living your life, like if you're living life constantly seeking approval of other people and changing your character just to fit in, then you're not actually living your life.
Yep.
So I just believe that it's your life. Own it. Don't be the person who sacrifices integrity to win. You know, don't make promises you can't keep. I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's that. Just own everything in your life.
Got it. That's three great things that I think everybody should take away, because that's, especially number two, don't fake yourself. I think that's the biggest one out of everything. That's the one that I kind of will stress the most, that I hope people will take away, is that you cannot fake what you love and what you like to do. Find what you love and follow that.
Yeah, man. And again, I don't think people understand, like, we can see through that shit. Like,
yeah.
Fake passion is everywhere. And passion is not something that you just find out of thin air. It's something that you develop in time. So you might not be passionate about something right now. That's okay. Try new things, experiment with new things, but don't pretend to be passionate about something.
Yep. And then final question is, usually I do three books, but I know since you do your daily walks and sometimes you listen to podcasts, so you could split between them. So three books and podcasts that you think that people should read or listen to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a tough question. A lot of people usually get stuck on this one.
You know what makes this question so tough is that I feel like there is usually a purpose or a reason behind reading a book or listening to a podcast. So I don't like to give blind recommendations when I don't know what the specific person is interested in. I think anyone in the world can benefit from the book Mindset by Carol Dweck, because we were talking about growth and fixed mindset earlier, and that applies to every single area of your life. And that's not so focused. So it has nothing to do with specifically fitness or nutrition or business or finance or being a better partner. It's literally having the right mindset can encompass all of that.
Okay.
So I do think that is a recommendation worth giving. From there, man, that's hard. because I'm more, I really like the books that help you on that mindset level. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of Grit by Angela Duckworth.
No.
Amazing. Again, amazing. Relentless by Tim Grover.
Yep. A lot of people have listed, the past three straight guests have all listed Relentless by Tim Grover as a book to read.
Yeah. I mean, you know, tons of books like Ryan Holiday, Mark Manson, Principles by Ray Dalio. So I really think it, maybe read the summary of a book and find out if it's something that you think is worth spending your time reading. You know, find out what your interests are. When it comes to podcasts, I mean, obviously your podcast. that's another thing, man. Luckily with podcasts now, right, we have show notes and we have things like that. So find maybe something that you're interested in if it's entrepreneurship. I mean, impact theory, I would say, is probably changed my life. Tom Bilyeu is someone that you're familiar with. Tom Bilyeu, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. So we all know co-founder Quest Nutrition, yeah. Impact Theory, all that. I've obviously had the opportunity to work with Quest in the past, but also meet Tom on multiple occasions.
Ooh, that must have been fun.
Yeah, man. When I say life-changing, like, that doesn't mean that I necessarily have to agree with every single thing he says, especially when it comes to nutrition. We have differences in opinion when it comes to that, but as far as someone whose work ethic I feel is just about unmatched, and his delivery, his ability to interview the guests on his show, the way he thinks, his thought process, the way he responds to questions. I mean, that's been life-changing for me. And like I said, I've met him before. He actually came to do a talk in New York City and I went to, and not only was I blown away by the talk that he gave, but the fact that he kind of mentioned me to the audience and had nothing but great things to say about me. And then I spent time with him afterwards. Like, that man has really made a profound impact on my mindset and, you know, the decision-making for that. Just, yeah, really, really great guy. I highly recommend his show, Impact Theory, a podcast, and also they do the video on YouTube.
Yep.
But there are tons and tons and tons of great books and podcasts and audiobooks. And I just think find something that just piques your interest and just dive in. And if it's not for you, then what's the worst that happened? You read a book. I think that's a pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. So last kind of little blurb. You get your 20 seconds of plugging away real quick. Where can people find you if they want to get your coaching, get any advice from you, or just want to reach out?
Yeah, really just Matty Fusaro on everything. That's MattyFusaro. I don't know if you could put that somewhere.
Just, yeah, I'll put it in the show. I will put it in the show notes.
Okay. So yeah, it's pretty much at Matty Fusaro on everything. So whether that's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, FusaroFitness.com. If you're interested in coaching, I would say I'm probably right now most active on Instagram. So you send me a DM. As soon as I read it, I will get back to you. And other than that, trying to slowly work my way back into YouTube with consistency there.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I'm always we're trying, man. We're working on it. But I'm always here to help. So anyone listening to this, any of your listeners, if they ever have a question about anything or need something, you know, whatever you want to put in the show notes, they can feel free to email me or DM me on Instagram, and I'd be more than happy to help them out.
Yep, definitely reach out to Matty if you can. He has very good advice. I reached out to him, as you can see, plenty of times, and it's worked out fairly well. So thank you again, Matty, for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time out. The hour went by pretty quick. So we're going to let you go, but just wanted to say thank you so much. Thank you to everybody who has listened to this podcast. If you can, leave a subscribe and leave a review down below. So helps me out, helps Maddie out. So thank you, Maddie, again.
No, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on here, and to everyone listening, we appreciate your time and attention. So it's been an honor being on here, man. Thank you.
Yep.